Well, we're continuing our study of the book of Deuteronomy, and tonight we're going to be looking at a much larger passage than we have been looking at. We're going to be looking at all of chapter 2 and a good chunk of chapter 3 as well. So chapter 2, verse 1 through chapter 3, 11 will be our scripture reading and our sermon text for this evening. I invite you to turn to that. Hear the word of the Lord. Then we turned and journeyed into the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea, as the Lord told me. And for many days we traveled around Mount Seir. Then the Lord said to me, "You have been traveling around this mountain country long enough. Turn northward and command the people. You are about to pass through the territory of your brothers, the people of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. So be very careful. Do not contend with them, for I will not give you any of their land, no, not so much as for the sole of the foot to tread on, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. You shall purchase food from them with money that you may eat, and you shall also buy water from them with money that you may drink. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He knows you're going through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing." So we went on away from our brothers, the people of Esau, who live in Seir, away from the Arabah road, from Elath and Ezion-Geber. And we turned and went in the direction of the wilderness of Moab. And the Lord said to me, "Do not harass Moab or contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar to the people of Lot for a possession. The Emim formerly lived there, a people great and many, as tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also counted as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Emim. The Horites also lived in Seir formerly, but the people of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them and settled in their place, as Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave to them. Now rise up and go over the brook Zered." So we went over the brook Zered, and the time from our leaving Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the brook Zered was 38 years, until the entire generation, that is the men of war, had perished from the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them. For indeed the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from the camp until they had perished. So as soon as all the men of war had perished and were dead from among the people, the Lord said to me, "Today you are to cross the border of Moab at Ar. And when you approach the territory of the people of Ammon, do not harass them or contend with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot for a possession. It is also counted as a land of Rephaim. Rephaim formerly lived there, but the Ammonites call them Zamzumim, a people great and many and tall as the Anakim. But the Lord destroyed them before the Ammonites, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place, as he did for the people of Esau, who live in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites before them, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place, even to this day. As for the Avim, who lived in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, destroyed them and settled in their place. Rise up, set out on your journey, and go over the valley of the Arnon. Behold, I have given into your hand Sihon, the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. begin to take possession and contend with him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you on the peoples who are under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. So I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, "Let me pass through your land. I will go only by the road. I will not turn aside, neither to the right nor to the left. You shall sell me food for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot, as the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, and the Moabites, who live in Ar, did for me, until I go over the Jordan into the land that the Lord our God is giving us." But Sihon, the king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him, for the Lord your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might give him into your hand, as he is this day. And the Lord said to me, "Behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to take possession, that you may occupy his land." Then Sihon came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Jahaz. And the Lord our God gave him over to us, and we defeated him and his sons and all his people. And we captured all his cities at that time, and devoted to destruction every city, men, women, and children. We left no survivors, only the livestock we took as spoil for ourselves, with the plunder of the cities that we captured. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the city that is in the valley as far as Gilead, there was not a city too high for us. The Lord our God gave all into our hands. Only to the land of the sons of Ammon did you not draw near, that is, to all the banks of the river Jabbok and the cities of the hill country, whatever the Lord our God had forbidden us. Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. But the Lord said to me, "Do not fear him, for I have given him and all his people and his land into your hand, and you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon." So the Lord our God gave into our hand Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people, and we struck him down until he had no survivor left. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city that we did not take from him. 60 cities, the whole region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these were cities fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides very many unwalled villages. And we devoted them to destruction, as we did to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, devoting to destruction every city, men, women, and children. But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as our plunder. So we took the land at that time out of the hand of the two kings of the Amorites, who were beyond the Jordan, from the valley of the Arnon to Mount Hermon. The Sidonians call Hermon Sirion, while the Amorites call it Seir. All the cities of the tableland and all Gilead and all Bashan as far as Salakah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. For only Og, the king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaim. Behold, his bed was a bed of iron. Is it not in Rabbah of the Ammonites? 9 cubits was its length, and 4 cubits its breadth, according to the common cubit. Thus far, the reading of God's holy and inspired word. May he add his blessing to his word this day. Well, we are in the midst of the section of the book of Deuteronomy that's known as the historical prologue. And in this section, we see that the Lord is the great king who is setting up a treaty with his people, Israel. And as he does this, he begins by reminding them of the many benefits that he has extended to them. And the reason why he is doing this in this section is to establish why they owe their loyalty to him. He's saying, look at all the things I have done for you. Now you be faithful to me. Now in the passage that we have just read, we see how the Lord uses Israel's most recent experiences that have brought them up to this point where they're on the brink of entering into the promised land. He uses them to encourage them as they prepare to take possession of the promised land. These dealings that Israel had with the nations that lived in the vicinity of the land that they were about to inherit was instructive. It was used to remind the Israelites of what kind of God they have. So Moses brings these things to mind in order to stir up the people's faith that the Lord will be true to his promise to put them in possession of the land of Canaan. So chapter 2 in verse 1 picks up right where chapter 1 left off. After receiving the Lord's judgment for their rebellious and unbelieving refusal to take possession of the land that the Lord was giving them, the Israelites turned from Kadesh and journeyed in the wilderness. And then Moses says this, in the second part of verse 1 of our text. And for many days we traveled around Mount Seir. Do you know how many years that sentence is summarizing? 40 years. That summarizes the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, all there in one sentence. So this reminds us that Deuteronomy is a selective history. It is not an exhaustive one. Well, when the time of wilderness wandering reached its end, the Lord instructed Moses to lead the people through the lands that lay to the east of the Jordan River, the region known as Transjordan. Now, if you have maps in the back of your Bible, you may have one that is from this basic time period, and it may actually label the nations that occupied these lands during this period. So you may find it helpful to take a look at that. So in the first 23 verses of chapter 2, Israel's journeys through lands that belong to the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites. Now, all three of these groups were actually related to the Israelites. The Edomites were descended from Jacob's twin brother Esau, while the Moabites and the Ammonites were descended from Abraham's nephew Lot. And because of that connection that they had with the covenant people, God gave them lands of their own also. Now, as Moses recounts Israel's travels through these three lands, there are a couple of recurring themes. There's a number of repetitions in this passage, and that's significant. God's calling our attention to those things. Now, one of the themes is the Lord's command for Israel not to contend with the people who live there. Three times he tells his people, don't mess with them. Don't contend with them. Be very careful. These lands are not part of the inheritance that is being given to Israel. These are lands that the Lord has given to the Edomites, to the Moabites, and to the Ammonites. Now, why is that significant? Well, first of all, it emphasizes that Yahweh's power extends beyond Israel. He's not just the God of Israel, he is the God of all the earth. Even the land surrounding Palestine is clearly under his control, and he gives it to whomever he will. And second, and I think most significantly, this tells us that, and this told the Israelites especially, that what God had done for Edom and for Moab and for Ammon, that this was a foreshadowing of what he was about to do for Israel. The Lord gave these lands to these nations. He put them in possession of these lands. And now he's going to do the same thing with Israel. He's going to put them in possession of the land of Canaan. So you can see that what God is doing here is he's giving Israel reasons for trusting him. He's saying, look, I've done this before. This isn't my first time. I've done this before. You can trust me that I will do this for you. Now, another theme that's repeated in the accounts of Israel's travels through Moab and Ammon is the Lord's mention of the people that he overthrew. Actually, it's also mentioned in the section on Moab, the people that were in Esau's territory as well. The people that God overthrew in order to give these lands to the Edomites, the Moabites, and the Ammonites. So the region that was given to the descendants of Esau was occupied by a people called the Horites. They're mentioned in verse 12, and then they are mentioned again in verse 22. So the Lord overcame them and put Esau's descendants in possession of that land. Then the region that was given to Moab was previously inhabited by a people called the Emim. And the region that was given to Ammon was previously inhabited by people called the Zamzumim. That's fun to say. Zamzumim. So both the Emim and the Zamzumim especially stand out because they are compared to the giant-sized people that Israel had referred to in the preceding chapter. They refer to the Anakim. And so you have these three groups of giant-sized people, the Anakim, the Emim, and the Zamzumim, and they all belong to this class of giant people called the Rephaim. The Rephaim seems to be the generic name for really tall people. Now, the mention of these people brings to mind the fact that the presence of the Anakim in Canaan was one of the things that the Israelites cited 40 years earlier to explain why they would be stupid to try to take possession of the land of Canaan. You remember what they said in the previous chapter? They said, the people are greater and taller than we are. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. And besides, we have seen sons of the Anakim there. Oh no, the sons of the Anakim. Well, here in chapter 2, the Lord is taking Israel through two nations that gained possession of their land in spite of the fact that giant people lived there. The Lord dispossessed these people who were just like the dreaded Anakim. And then in chapter 3, as we see at the very end of the passage we read, the Lord gives his people victory over a king who is one of the Rephaim. Og is a Rephaim. Now, the Lord's reason for doing this seems quite clear. Once again, he is bolstering his people's faith. He is preparing them for the conquest of Canaan by showing them that what he is promising that he will do for them is something that he has done before. It's not irrational for them to trust him. He's giving them reasons to trust him. They have no reason to be afraid of the size of the inhabitants of Canaan. If the Lord was able to overcome the Emim and the Zamzumim, he's going to be able to handle the Anakim. If the descendants of Esau and Lot possessed their territories by gift of the Lord, then Israel can be confident that they too will gain possession of their land by God's power. Now, in addition to those repeated themes, there are a couple of other noteworthy things from this first section, from verses 1 through 23. First of all, the Israelites are told that they may purchase food and water from the Edomites, and then it says that Israel traveled away from the people of Esau. Now, it's interesting here that there's no mention of the fact that the Edomites actually refused to grant the Israelites safe passage through their land. That's why Israel had to travel away from the people of Esau. But that reason isn't given here. You can read about this in Numbers chapter 20, but Moses doesn't talk about it here. So once again, we see that this is a selective history. It's not an exhaustive one. Moses is emphasizing how the Lord provided for his people as he brought them alongside the border of Edom And this encourages the current generation to trust that the Lord will also make provision for them. And then I think one other significant detail from this first section is the mention of the crossing of the brook Zered in chapter 2, verse 14. This may not seem all that significant, but I think it is because I think that it reminds us of two other important crossings of bodies of water from the period of the Exodus and the conquest. The crossing of the Zered marks a new beginning for God's people, just as the crossing of the Red Sea marked a new beginning, and just as the crossing of the Jordan marked a new beginning. So the Lord's sworn oath that he would prevent the rebellious generation from entering the land of promise, that has now been fulfilled, and now it's time to move on to new things. Those who belong to that rebellious generation, they have died in the wilderness. And now the new generation is able to move forward. Well, that brings us to the second half of our passage, verse 24 of chapter 2 through chapter 3, verse 11. So again, the first 23 verses focus on Israel traveling through or around nations that they weren't allowed to engage militarily. And now in this latter half of our passage, it talks about how Israel did engage two groups of people and they were given victory over them. So these are two kings from the Transjordan. So as the Lord instructs his people to move on, he assures them that they have no reason to fear. In fact, God is going to make the nations afraid of them by giving them victory over King Sihon and King Og. So these things are kind of going to be, the news is going to spread after these kings are defeated. It's going to spread into the land of Canaan, and people are going to be terrified of the Israelites. So much so that a prostitute named Rahab is going to hear a report of this, and it's going to end up meaning that she'll be saved through this. Now, these two kings ruled nations that were technically outside the boundaries of the promised land. But the Lord is going to give his people further encouragement by making these two kings a sort of first fruits of all the peoples who are going to be dispossessed in Canaan. Now, because Sihon's kingdom is not part of the promised land, the Israelites first go to him with an offer of peace. You know, they weren't supposed to do that with anyone in the land of Canaan, but this is a different situation here. This is not technically within the boundaries of Canaan. And so Moses first gives an offer of peace and a request to pass through his land, just as they had requested from the others that they had traveled through. But Sihon refuses. And the reason why he refuses is very interesting, isn't it? It says that the Lord hardened him. The Lord hardened his spirit and his heart. What does that remind you of? Well, that reminds you of what happened with Pharaoh 40 years before. So this refusal that put Sihon and the people that he ruled under divine judgment, just as Pharaoh's hardness of heart put the Egyptians under divine judgment. And really, this marks the fulfillment of something that God had promised all the way back in the book of Genesis. You may recall that in Genesis 15, when the Lord was confirming his covenant with Abraham, he said that Abraham's offspring shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. It's interesting, Sihon and Og were Amorites. They were Amorite kings. And I think that we could think of how this in some ways shows the Lord's great patience towards sinners. He's giving Sihon one last chance here. Many centuries had to pass before the Amorites were ripened for judgment. Now that the time has come for judgment, the Israelites are God's instrument for carrying out that judgment. So this is not, you know, merely a situation where these innocent people, Sihon and his people, are devastated and wiped out by an invading force that wants to take over their land. Sihon is not innocent. His people are not innocent. They're sinners. And God's hammer of judgment is now falling upon them. The Israelites are his instrument to bring that judgment. And so the kingdoms of Sihon and then also of Og are subjected to the exact same fate as the nations that are within the boundaries of the promised land. Everyone is put to death, even women and children. And this testifies to the fact that this victory was entirely the Lord's, but also it testifies to the fact that now this land is holy. That's why everyone has to be wiped out. This now is actually part of the possession that the Lord is giving his people. Because this land will now be given to a portion of Israel's tribes, the Transjordan tribes, as their allotment, those who are not holy, those who do not belong to the people of God, must be removed from the land entirely. And this reminds us, this was a unique period in redemptive history. It's actually pointing forward to the very end of history. It's pointing forward to heaven, to the time when we will come into our true inheritance in God's heavenly kingdom. And we know that in that inheritance, there will be no one who is unholy will be permitted. Without holiness, you will not see the Lord. Only God's holy people will be there. But during this time, which was kind of a foreshadowing of heaven and that permanent inheritance for God's people, Israel was to be separate from the people of the world. And they were separate in two senses. They were to be separate culturally, and they were to be separate spiritually. So culturally, in the sense that they were not to allow anyone, any other nation, to live within their territory, because the Lord knew what would happen, and it did happen, in fact. They would be tempted to worship false gods. Well, we live in a different era of redemptive history. We live in an era in which we do live alongside unbelievers in a shared culture, in a common culture. And yet, it's important for us to remember that that principle of spiritual separation still holds true for us. And it's important for us to maintain that spiritual separation, even as we live in a common culture with unbelievers. Well, Moses' description of the victory over Sihon includes this note. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the city that is in the valley as far as Gilead, there was not a city too high for us. We were able to take them all. And then we see something very similar in the description of the victory over Og, where it says this: "And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city that we did not take from them. 60 cities. The whole region of Argob, the kingdom of Og and Bashan, all these were cities fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides very many unwalled villages." And once again, we're reminded of something that the Israelites said back in chapter 1 when they were making excuses for their unbelief, for their refusal to take possession of the land of Canaan 40 years earlier. Remember what they said after hearing the report of the spies. They said this about the land of Canaan: "The cities are great and fortified up to heaven." Oh, really? You think that's going to be a problem for the Lord? Well, here he shows them that it's not going to be a problem. Here in chapters 2 and 3, Moses is reminding God's people that because the Lord is with them, no city is going to be too great for them to take. Their thorough victory over Sihon and over Og was an encouragement to their faith. It would assure them that the Lord would give the same victory when they cross the Jordan. So again, I think that this passage is a very significant one and well worth pondering. It shows us how the Lord provided great encouragements to his people's faith so that they would be able to act in faith when they entered Canaan. Though God had promised to give this land to the Israelites, he knew that their faith in his promise would waver. After all, if all that they had to go on was his word. And so he gave them something else. He gave them actually concrete examples. He took them through lands that he had taken from powerful peoples and given to others. And then he gave the Israelites themselves victory over two very powerful kings. And I think that this really points us to the immense kindness and great patience and gracious condescension of our God. He provides supports to strengthen our faith. He is the one who supports us in our weakness. He is the one who ensures that we will persevere in faith and enter into our inheritance. Praise God for that. Amen.